Hello everyone, I'm Tara and we are discussing service management and the various elements of service management, whether it is the IT enabled part of it, whether it is the locational strategy part of it, whether it's the customer service part of it, various tools involved. And while we've been looking at cases of various design ideas, goods, services, both in India and overseas, we've seen that the ones which are successful are the ones where you have had a lot of strategy, a lot of investment in the entire life cycle of the product or the surface, or the service, and not just in specific, right from ideation, inception, to all the way to launch, beyond that, and it's an ongoing process. Now, when we also looked at some of the cases where success did not happen, it was very evident that there were multiple flaws in different cases, but in a lot of the cases, we saw that definitely elements of design were not given due importance at the start. And or along the process, and there was a rush to monetize, rush to launch, and that is a short recipe for failure and disaster. So, for example, when we had studied the case of Theranos, then we had seen how there was this idea of, so many tests and diagnostics based on one drop of blood and, various other claims. But there wasn't enough research, there wasn't enough planning on how to go about it, and the rush to launch, the fundings, the tie-ups, and so much of marketing, PR, the CEO being a poster girl for multiple magazines, being at all the TED Talks, being, interviewed by right from, journalists to politicians to everyone. And the whole frenzy of this hype is useless when your service design itself is flawed. And eventually, it went completely kaput. And here, very clearly, you can understand that it wasn't even an issue of funding, the kind of funding that this company received. It wasn't like there were challenges in terms of funding where not enough dedication, engineering, thinking, time, testing could be devised on the design. And possibly if that had been done at the right times, then possibly the product wouldn't have been launched to begin with. Because it was very clear that regardless of the kind of service design you put into it, you're not really, this is not an idea which is realistic. It's something which is imaginary, futuristic, but scientifically not possible. So that was a huge flaw. Likewise, when we were talking about Google Glass. Now, Google definitely knows their design, definitely knows their technology. We very well know that in terms of, the kind of product, the kind of services they have offered. But in this case, the service design, despite all its technology, futuristicness, was flawed when it actually came to launch and usage, because it was seen as a very expensive, low user friendly, low functionality, gadget. And the whole idea in practice was not what was envisaged at the various stages. So designs, purely the design, and when I'm talking about design, I'm not simply talking about the optics or how a design looks visually and the aesthetics of a design. I'm talking about the design from a functionality point of view, from a user friendliness point of view, from a adaptability point of view. Now, in today's day and age, technology is such a big part of things. So is it in sync with the other technology around it? Very often we see that there are apps when your phone is upgraded, you know, when your iOS is, your phones are upgraded, your smartphones are upgraded, your Androids are upgraded, very often there are certain apps which stop working. Now, that is because they are not compatible with the upgraded version of the software. They were prepared for a certain version, and now with the upgraded version, they have stopped working or malfunctioning. Now, and while there are simultaneously, there are other apps which are working absolutely fine, which have inbuilt in them the ability to get updated with the updated software and then hence to work seamlessly and be compatible with the newer versions. Now, yes, sometimes, you know, for that update to happen, you have to uninstall and reinstall the app, or you have to reboot your phone. But that's, you know, okay. That's not something which requires so much effort. That's, you know, we reboot our laptop, we reboot our computers. But there are lots, you know, you'll keep rebooting and checking and they're just not working. And then you'll go and do some research and you'll realize, well, by the way, this app is not compatible with the latest version of your software. So these are obviously flaws in service design, and then obviously they are going to lose business, they're going to lose customers. So let's delve into service design process in a little more detail. So let's understand the objectives here. It's you want to make the experience as seamless for your user, but to achieve that outcome, you have to work a lot behind the scenes to get to that point. Now, first of all, when an idea comes up, whether that's an Uber, where there is a gap in taxi hiring requirement, you know, whether it is a medical services a facility, which is a practo, which is responding to a gap in consumers and patients wanting to have, before reaching out to a doctor, understanding their charges, their reviews, having some sort of insight before going to a medical practitioner. So one of the things which becomes very important at the idea stage itself is, first of all, is there a gap? So how will you know whether there's a gap? The gap is coming from a need. So there are two kinds of designs. One is when you have a new design, new product which is being launched, and hence there is a design starting from scratch. And then you have, when you have an existing product and it is being upgraded and replaced by a new design or by a different product or service. So for example, in an earlier chapter, I was giving the example of hyphen OG sunscreen. Now, they spoke about, the promoter, the actor Kriti Sanand, spoke about the latest batch of the product, where two aspects of the sunscreen had been upgraded and improved in response to customer services and customer surveys and needs. Now, this is a case where the it's a replacement of a product rather of a design rather than a new design completely. So when you have a new design, then at that point of time, a large part of the process involved a lot of understanding of the customer's needs. What is the demand for, and what is the supply? Where is the supply, or is there no supply? So a very, very large part is the identifying the demand and a lack of supply. We're all familiar with the show Shark Tank. It's become very popular. It's been popular internationally for a very long time, but now Shark Tank India has become extremely popular. And one of the results of Shark Tank India is that a lot of entrepreneurs who are pitching their products there may or may not be getting the sharks to buy in, are identifying a gap where there is a consumer need, and then creating a design, a product, a service, a design to respond to that need. And if you see, you know, social media platforms, especially Instagram, then you will see that products and services which have received a positive feedback on Shark Tank from the sharks either positive feedback or a buy-in in terms of a stake on Shark Tank are immensely successful on Instagram, because they heavily market their Shark Tank experience, and being on Shark Tank gives them some sort of stamp of quality and reliability and authenticity that, look, these experts, industry experts, had a positive view on us or ended up taking a stake in us. Now, why is that happening? That is happening because they assessed that there was a gap. For example, an entrepreneur who wanted to create a healthy snack for her grandchild. Now, you know, when kids snack, the little kids can have a lot of tummy issues, tummy aches, and you know, we know snacks, savory snacks, sweet snacks aren't always made by the healthiest ingredients. For example, maida. Maida is used in a lot of snack preparations, but is not the healthiest. We know it is not the healthiest ingredient, you know, versus a whole wheat or a millet or oats, etc. So she saw that, you know, she was, her grandkid loved to snack, and for his, as any kid, and for his tiffin box and for his snack, she used to prepare snacks at home using healthy ingredients, jaggery, millet, oats, etc., what have you. And she used to prepare those for him, and he would consume it. And a lot of the other kids, you know, when he would take his tiffin box to his nursery or to his school, then the other kids would end up eating it as well, or, you know, like running off with his tiffin. And it was very popular. And then she realized that, look, if this is a need, there is a need, and I'm supplying this in my own home. If there is a demand for this and I'm supplying this in my own home and it's so popular, then there is a need for it at a community level, at a city level, at a country level, and at a market level. Young children, I mean, look at the population of India, the number of young children. So then there is an immense demand for it, where other parents would also like to use this, because these days people are very health conscious, and not just in tier 1 cities, but tier 2 and tier 3 cities. And if by using healthier snacks, their children can avoid tummy aches and visits to the doctor, then it's a huge success. So she pitched her idea for creating the snack, which she had already started at a small level, by using healthy ingredients. Now with this, the design comes in the product, in the research, in the packaging, because the minute it is something to eat, the packaging has to be very, very safe, airtight. It has to be in a way there where the edibles do not go bad before they are bought and consumed. There is a perishable nature to any edibles, how long they can last, and then, of course, you know, your distribution design, all of those. So now she had obviously done all of that before she went to pitch her idea, because otherwise, you know, she would not get a buy-in or a positive feedback. So you see the design, she identified a new product, new design, she identified a product, and she identified this gap, analyzed all the broad aspects of the design, and introduced it. Now, tomorrow, if she wants to upgrade this, you know, she gets feedback from the market, whether it's in terms of taste, whether it's in terms of, you know, the size of the product, or, you know, size of the packaging, whatever it is, she is going to then be studying the customer journey. So when you are upgrading an existing product or service or replacing it, then you don't necessarily study just the gap. In addition to the gap, which you have already identified and supplied to, you also study the larger customer journey, because there is an existing customer journey to study. Before the launch of a new product, there is no existing customer journey to study. But once a product has been launched and consumers have bought it, then the customer journey actually starts. Purchase, post-purchase experience, feedback, returns, etc. So for a replacement, that whole customer journey becomes extremely important. So then the customer journey is to be studied. Now, once a new product is launched, then the whole cycle begins again if someone wants to launch another product. Is there a gap? Is there a need? Is there a demand? Is there a supply which is profitable enough? Is there a demand which is profitable enough? All of these go into the blueprint of creating what your design should be. So you first identify a target audience. In this case, the target audience was children of a certain age. And then you study, research their needs, understand their requirements, understand which of their requirements and needs are not currently being serviced, and then respond to it. So this is the whole concept of customer design, of how critical it is and how it works. Again, giving you an idea in terms of right from ideation to commercialization, how the whole design element works. Some of the very useful and relevant aspects of an effective design are how useful is it? Is it usable? Is it efficient? Is it desirable? So for example, again, coming back to these Shark Tank ideas which are there, believe you me, a lot of the ideas may be positive, but may not necessarily eventually get very good customer feedback. For example, even I have ordered products which have been marketed as having received a positive feedback on Shark Tank, but having used them, I have not found them as effective or never rebought them. So somewhere I have felt it's not useful enough, or it's not as efficient as it promises to me. It's not meeting a gap. So all of these elements, a service provider or a product provider will understand if they are assessing all these elements, has it been received well, and then accordingly responding to it. Now, once again, I want to stress, design is not simply aesthetics and visual appeal. Design is a very holistic design thinking from a practicality point of view, affordability point of view, distribution point of view, all of those elements. So it is, please, whenever you think design, because in our mind, typically the minute we think design, we think, the visual aspects of it, the beauty aspects of it, how appealing it looks visually. No, design is everything of the product and service, right from the functionality of it to the adaptability of it to the design of the product and the packaging. So innovation occurs when you have, as I said, a new product or you have a replacement product, and in all of these innovations keep coming in where you move with the customer requirement. Now, I had given an example of Dunzo, the concierge pickup delivery through WhatsApp, which didn't succeed and went offline in January. Now, clearly, with competition of so many e-commerce delivery sites and vendors coming up, there was a lack of adaptability and innovation with in the case of Dunzo. And here what I want to again stress is that there was no dearth of funding. So a lot of people have innovation but cannot test that innovation, cannot work on that innovation because they purely don't have the funding. In this case, there was no lack of funding. They were one of the first startups to get funding from Google. Reliance put in $200 million into the company in 2022. But see where the allocation of that resource went. So the allocation of this resource actually went into things like aggressive marketing. So in 2022, in September, October, when the IPL happened, Dunzo came up with a very popular 20-second ad campaign during the IPL. And believe you me, advertising during an IPL match is so expensive per second, per however the meter works. It is one of the most expensive time for advertising and for screen space and for TV space. So They spent close to $5 million of this $200 million just on one 20-second ad, which was played repeatedly and, you know, thrust down the consumers. And in all fairness, it was received well. It was received well. They saw a surge, immediate surge in traffic for their service immediately after this, but it was very short-lived. That traffic surge happened for maybe about a month and then died down. So you're not going to deploy that kind of resource behind an idea, which is, you know, an advertising design, a strategy, which is pretty much bringing you returns for a month and then dying down. So clearly there was a design flaw in their entire design thinking of how to allocate this resource, how to improve their service and how to make this response and increase traffic sustainable over a period of time. So the service operations, the design operations, the competition did them in. So now let's look at one of the successful cases, which we have been touching on in different chapters also. But once again, it's a very interesting example from a design thinking point of view, and to understand the various elements of the blueprint that go into the process of a design. So I had mentioned about McDonald's in a previous chapter. Now, when in the 1940s, the founders of McDonald's, they observed that there is a gap. The drive-in bars were very popular in the US at that point of time, and they observed that there is a gap here because the drive-in bars end up having very long queues. You know, people are driving in their cars and having to, stay in the queue for very long. And one of the reasons for that queue being very long and moving very slowly is also because when they come to the window and, you know, they have the product menu, deciding on which product to select and purchase takes a lot of time. You know, they get confused and, you know, there's such a long, product lengthy product option, a paper there or a brochure they're being given. So they identified this gap, and that is how McDonald's, the idea of McDonald's was born, based on the analysis of these customers. What was their need? Their need was to eat something tasty, and their need was to get it quick. So what they did was they identified just the best-selling products. There are the out of the 40 options that these drive-in bars offer, what are the four best-selling products from those? Let's have a service, an outlet which provides only the best-selling. So it's easier and takes shorter time to decide between 3 to 4 items versus 40 items. That is one. And secondly, how will we ensure that it gets to them within 30 seconds? And the movie, The Founder, if some of you are interested, you can go back and check out this movie, The Founder, very interesting movie on the creation of McDonald's, shows how the founders went to a tennis court. They're in a tennis court, you know, they were playing a tennis game. And what they did was that on the sand and the ground in the tennis court, they actually started designing, okay, this is where the cars will drive up, this is where the service window is, where they will get their takeaway, this is where the meals are being cooked inside the McDonald's outlet, this is how the kitchen is working. So from the time the order best selling, so some elements are already prepared. How do they get assembled? How do they come? How are they stored from there? How does the delivery happen? And they drew this entire blueprint in the sand, and then they themselves as actors mock tested how long it is taking them to reach the delivery point from the time of you have the order, you at the order window because it's a drive-in bar, and you go and from the kitchen, you get the item, you put it in the packaging, you deliver. So they physically tested that as if they are doing a mock rehearsal of the whole process to see whether it is even practical or they are just envisaging it, you know. And that shows you the minuteness to the minuteness of the level to which they went to understand the functionality. Now, today that goes in the 1940s, technology wasn't there, the digital revolution wasn't there. But today that is going to get magnified, and the minuteness of so many more aspects are going to have to be assessed and understood for this entire design thinking to create a design which is effective. Now, just because McDonald's has had a fabulous success the world over doesn't mean they don't keep innovating, doesn't mean they don't keep adapting and changing. So, for example, India. McDonald's is extremely popular in India. It's also budget friendly in a lot of ways. But of course, given the population size of India, McDonald's queues can get long, right? So very often you'll end up having a long queue in McDonald's and you're getting frustrated because, you know, you've come to a joint that claims quick service and, you know, you get your food really quickly. And it's not like going to a restaurant where you have to pay 20, you know, wait at your table for 20 and 30 minutes, you know. So they have in 2003, they have introduced a self-service kiosk the world over. And if you go to a McDonald's outlet today in India, you will see the self-service kiosks at every outlet. And a lot of the minute you walk in, you know, one of the staff persons will ask you, like, would you like to use the self-service kiosk, which is reducing the load on the person at the check-in counter, at the order counter. So you are doing this, you know, there is a design in terms of those self-service kiosks, how easy it is for you to order what you want to order, get your token, move to the, you know, desk where you, counter where you receive your items. So there is constant evolution, and which is making things simpler. Now, the result of the self-service kiosks is, even though a lot of people who walk in may not be technology friendly, one, there's usually someone there helping them, guide them. And secondly, they have been made so simple that those on-screen options and, you know, guidelines and next are very simple to use, even for people who are not very, very technology friendly. So right from the usage, the payment option, you know, how do you make payment here? Are you inserting cash? Are you placing a card? Are you doing GPay? Whatever it is, you know. So that has resulted in a definite increase in orders at those at the outlets, and has reduced the time of receiving. And obviously, all of that leads to the bottom line impact and also helps in overhead costs. So you see, a holistic design thinking takes all of these aspects into account, and not just any few aspects. So these are the various elements, right from ideation to the launch. And especially in this day and age, the prototype, you know, creating your prototype, testing it and launching, testing it as early as possible, so that you have holistic, you know, feedback, and creating a toolkit. When I'm saying as early, I don't mean take shortcuts, but don't delay. You know, we know first mover advantage. Competition comes up with a similar thing. Next thing you know, they have launched their product. So all of these are vital elements of your service design. Involve users. Now, when it comes to customer surveys and incorporating feedback, I'll be touching on another case later on, for example, Starbucks. Starbucks came up with this My Starbucks idea, where they actually invited customers to share ideas in terms of across departments, right from corporate social responsibility to anything else, and how they involve users and customers into their whole brainstorming and their design thinking and their execution. So these some of these elements will be seen practically in every case that we study, and involving users will make them feel inclusive, will make it more realistic, because you are actually using it, testing it on the actual end user. You will get very unique insights. It's going to mitigate your risks because, you know, you have this mock testing which has happened before the end launch. Various methods in which you can do your service design is by having workshops, mapping the customer journey, user interviews, test groups. Now, very often we have seen that, you know, test groups are not told what service or product or company is behind the idea, so that there are no biases. So, you know, people will be invited, customers with within a certain target group will be invited to participate in these studies, in these tests, and give their feedback. And that is going to be evaluated, which is very, very useful, because then there are no biases in terms of brand loyalty or negative bias. You don't like it. You're giving your feedback on the usability of the design of this prototype, which is being tested purely based on functionality, usability. Is it something which meets your requirement? Is it something that you even have a demand for? Is it something that you're willing to pay a certain price for? And whatever your feedback may be in terms of design, in terms of size, in terms of technology, all of those things. And you are giving this in a completely neutral, unbiased manner because you are not being told what company it is. You're not being told which brand it is. And you are simply, you know, there's usually an agency which comes in the middle. There's the client or the company and the agency. And agency has taken on this task to collect all this data and market research, etc., for the client. So the agency will not share the details in terms of the brand name so that you get a completely neutral experience of the customer's journey or his feedback and his response.